You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In 1996, Savion Glover became a household name and the name in tap because of his electrifying star turn in the Broadway show Bringin' the Noise, Bringin' the Funk. But he's branched out in the dozen years since then, breaking out of the tap event and festival mode in favor of a wide range of projects that combine music and dance. And he'll be performing this coming Thursday, July 31st, at the B.B. King Blues Club. It is my great pleasure to welcome Savion Glover to the show today. Hi, Savion.
How are you?
I'm okay. Why have you stopped participating in the tap festivals?
Oh, well, things have changed,
Did you just find them limiting?
No, I just found them loveless. My mentors and pioneers are no longer. So there's a new generation in dance. There's a new energy happening they are not respecting the values of what once were. So I don't dig it. I come from, I guess, the old school, which is the true school, and that's it. You know, they have changed their objectives, and I like for the festivals to be festive, full of love and respect and stuff like that. And I don't see that, haven't seen that around in years.
But we have seen you engage in a number of different kinds of collaborations.
Sure.
You've done some with the great jazz pianist McCoy Tyner. Mm. And then you were at the Joyce Theater, blending music with classical pieces played by a string chamber orchestra. Mm. So do you have to... Does each collaboration require you to adjust the way you dance? I mean, is there a lot of variation in tap, or is it, in the end, do you wind up dancing pretty much the same way?
Yeah. We can look at tap dance in that sense, like vocabulary. Mm-hmm. You know, we all speak English, but if you happen to go into another country, you have to maybe slow down or learn a couple of new words and things like that. Same approach with tap. You know, my delivery, my approach is one of a musician. I approach the dance as if it is music. And I just play. I play my instrument. And try to fit in where I can according to what the music is inspiring.
Well, when we think of the history of tap, we think of a lot of famous dancers, but there were a number of drummers who also were great tappers.
Yeah.
Joe Jones, who was Count Basie's drummer,
yeah.
Buddy Rich, and there probably are any number of others. So do you think of yourself to some degree as playing a percussion instrument?
Sure. I mean, along that line, Gregory Hines was a great drummer, you know. I'm inspired by those people. You know, Sammy Davis, he was a great musician, great drummer. We are that. You know, it just translates through the feet sometimes better than the hands.
B.B. King's is quite different from the Joyce Theater. Mm-hmm. What will you be performing in your show there?
I've titled my appearance at B.B. King's this time, The Evidence. And I've titled it that because, I believe that the truth or the faith in improvisation leads to your true evidence of your artistry, or sometimes it can. So, I am an improvisationalist, and I sort of invite a couple of cats to come down and then see who shows up. And then we take it from there. But the main goal is to, again, allow people to enjoy the dance and understand the dance as music versus always thinking of it in a visual sense. You know, we want them to be able to hear it and groove to it and enjoy it in that way as well.
So as an improviser, you never dance the same thing twice?
I'm sure I do.
You know, well, there are probably certain patterns you fall
yeah,
into.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, again, it's like language. It's like dialogue. You know, of course we know this range of vocabulary, but when we choose to use it or what words and so forth, sometimes we say the same things in different ways or different styles. Same thing with tap.
Although when you're choreographing, you kind of expect the other dancers to do what you worked out, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what happens when you're with somebody like McCoy Tyner? Then that's really like a jazz experience. He's you never know what he's going to play, and he never knows what you're going to do.
That's exactly what we're talking about, just the true essence of the evidence. You know, being around those men, people like John Cole, not John Coltrane, I'm sorry, people like McCoy Tyner.
Who played, of course, with John Coltrane.
Yeah. So, I mean, they allow me to honor them through this powerful range of trust. They have allowed me to understand that they see what I do through my art form, and they trust that I can now blow, or I can play with them, or at least groove along with them, and I respect that, and I appreciate that so much. You know, once we get started, it's like it's just like being in the. I imagine myself in the 50s or the 60s when those guys were jamming. I'm just a part of the band.
Well, what kind of music will you be dancing to at B.B. King's?
Well, I'll be dancing to mostly sound. What I mean by sound is a cappella, the sound and the grooves of my feet, the melodies of my feet. Once I do involve the band, I've been listening lately to Miles Davis's Jean-Pierre groove, and I really like that. So I may want to experience, you know, pay my contribution to him through that song. And, of course, do my, which has become my, I guess, signature now, Stars and Stripes Forever, my twist on that. And that's it. That's all I have in mind.
My guest is Savion Glover, who will be at B.B. King Blues Club at 237 West 42nd Street next Thursday, July 31st at 8 p.m., doing a show called The Evidence. You started how young?
I started tap dancing when I was 7 years old.
And was it just a kind of thing where you... So, I mean, when I was a kid... Every young girl and half the boys studied tap at one point or another, and then that seemed to just stop happening.
Yeah, I think what happens is, you know, we grow. People just grow up, you know, and they sort of forget about, it's like Boy Scouts or something. I'm like a Boy Scout forever. Once a Boy Scout, always a Boy Scout. That's how tap dancing is or was to me. It wasn't like... You know, for some people, it's like a class. They take it while they're in elementary because it's a part of the day. And then as they move on to junior high, they get into other things. And then high school, they never knew about tap dancing. And as they become an adult and now they're 40 or 50 years old, they're in a position where they say, hey, you know, what happened to tap? But it still remains. You know, people are forever young. We will always have the youth and the young, so I think tap will always exist.
And you studied with Jimmy Slide, who was one of the greatest of the great. So unlike the kids I knew who studied with somebody who will never be remembered, it's some studio on the second floor of a building in Williamsburg. But tap was really big for a long time. And, you know, there was Fred Astaire and the Nicholas Brothers and Honey Coles and Gene Kelly and Ann Miller, they were all, Donald O'Connor, Eleanor Powell, Bojangles dancing with little Shirley Temple.
Yeah.
Did you watch all of those movies when you were a kid?
Sure. I still watch those movies now. Very inspiring. You know, I those are my study guides.
And each of them had a very different style. Is that because of the way somebody is built physically, do you think? Or how much of what you do can be attributed to just the way your body is built and certain inclinations?
No, I don't think the physicality is a part of it. I think it's about your mental approach to the art form and then your surroundings. you know, Lon Chaney, the tap dancer, was heavy.
Lon Chaney was a tap dancer?
Well, the Lon Chaney we
that
all know.
That scares me.
Well, I'm talking about the Isaiah Lon Chaney, not the Isaiah that we all know as the entertainer, but there was a great tap dancer named Lon Chaney. His first name was Isaiah Lon Chaney. He was the actual founder and director of the original Hoofers. But every time I say that, they think of the clown, Lon Chaney.
Mm-hmm. Or the horror guy.
Yeah, Lon Chaney. But no, it's a different Lon Chaney. You know, he was a big guy. He called his approach to the dance, he would say, okay, this is the big diesel going up north. So, like, he let everybody know. And then there were groups like Pork Chops and Patterson. This guy was big, you know, but very light on the feet. The approach was as smooth as ever. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think it's about how big or small someone is. I just think it's about the, again, the mental approach.
Well, what do you look for in other dancers when you're selecting someone to dance with?
Again, that's it. I just look for the person who wants to know about Jimmy Slide, or the person who cares to know who Steve Condos was. Mm-hmm. I don't look for the greatest dancer or the best dancer. The best and greatest dancers are not here anymore. So I would be looking for nothing. So I look for the people who are interested in continuing to advance the art form and the recognition behind the art form.
When you made your Broadway debut at 10, did you think, this is what I'm going to do the rest of my life?
Not at all, Mr. Lopate. This was something we were doing. We were coming to New York every weekend, taking tap classes, and we were going back to Newark, New Jersey, and playing basketball and doing all those things. And then one day it just happened. Once I started tap dancing, we were coming to New York, and then Tap Dance Kid happened, and, you know, nothing changed. It was just the addition of us coming to New York every night and performing, and then...
Well, you had to know something special was happening, because you were being taken under the wing of some of the greatest tappers of the time. You made a movie called Tap with Gregory Hines and Sammy Davis Jr. You were just a teenager, but you must have known that
you were working
with some pretty incredible people.
Once I, Tap Dance Kid was like the most showbiz atmosphere that I've been around as far as the dance. There were no hoofers. I didn't know about the hoofers or the style of hoofing in Tap Dance Kid. My Danny Daniels was the choreographer of Tap Dance Kid, and his style was more Broadway and I guess I want to say show-like. So I wasn't aware of, you know, Chaney and Chuck Green and these people. It wasn't until after that that I got introduced to that life of a hoofer. And that is when I started to realize that, you know, hey, I'm a part of something really special here, a tradition, an art form that's not just about entertaining, but I like to use the word edutaining. Edutainment is what I've been introduced to through tap dance.
You feel like you're teaching other people about dance?
Sure. I feel like what we do is tell stories, you know, through our dance, through our approach to the dance. Is again, like a musician, you know. These guys, you know, of course they can write songs, but the best thing is to just sit there and just play out their day and parts of their lives and allow us in on those experiences through their music, and that's what I've been learned to do.
Well, you have often been described as a protege of Gregory Hines, but I'm getting the feeling here that you feel like you learned from a lot of different people.
Yes, sir. I've you know, protege is these words are just people decide to all of a sudden say that, but you know, I never heard any of the guys say, yes, Savion is our protege, or this is the protege, or whatever, you know. That
you're going to carry on my tradition.
Yeah, I'm just a part of the family, you know. I'm happy to be known as a hoofer and part of the tradition, you know.
In the when Fred Astaire danced in the movies, they couldn't mic the floor, so they used to use spoons to make the sound of the tapping.
Yeah.
But you did the real tapping for the dancing penguin Mumbles in the animated film Happy Feet.
Mm.
So what did they do? They just put a mic underneath a board and recorded
it? Yeah. Well, where we are now with tap dancing, well, with my approach to tap dancing, and this is where Gregory Hines left us to deal with. His board was amplified. He had special mics that he'd put to the wood. There wasn't this boom mic like, you know, was several years ago, boom mics and little mics placed on the stage. You know, he's gotten it, he got it to a point where people can feel the dance more. So I just picked up on that, and that's what I sort of demand, I guess, wherever we go, so that the dance can be heard. So that is what was supported.
And then they had the penguin dance like you. Well,
yeah, I would do like the dancing, and it was called motion capture. I had the senses, about, you know, 100 sensors on me, and then they had the technology going on in the ceiling, and I would dance as myself, and they would introduce it or produce it as a penguin.
And that had to be weird, going to a movie and seeing yourself look like a penguin.
It was very funny.
So I guess what you're saying here is that you don't want to be pigeonholed. You want to, or penguin-holed for that matter. You just want to try to, if something occurs to you, you're going to try to do it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm a musician. So
the evidence, is this a show that you're doing in other places as well, or is this specific to this one appearance?
Oh, no, this is just specific to this one appearance, you know. Now, unless it's a story or a through line or a Broadway show or something like that, my club dates are just jams, you know. I like to jam. There's no specific theme or storyline that I'm going to deal with. It's mostly, you know, a celebration about the music and the dance.
And Saving Glover will be performing at the B.B. King Blues Club at 237 West 42nd Street this coming Thursday, a week from yesterday. That's July 31st at 8 p.m. In a show called The Evidence. If you want more information about it, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.